Now, I'd like to ask you a question. How do you know that today is the seventh day in the succession of weeks? Surely there's been a mistake made somewhere along the line, and we're probably meeting on the fifth day, or like the Protestant, the Catholics like to call it now, the eighth day. That would be Sunday. They literally do call that the eighth day for their own religious reasons. And again, another question, why does worshiping God on a particular day even really matter? It matters a lot, and according to the Bible, God has designed time. He has established the means for us to measure time. And in fact, time is very important to God. I'd like to kind of focus now on a central element in God's plan for time. And what would that be? It's the week. The seven-day week that ends with the Sabbath. We happen to be meeting on that Sabbath that has come down to us from time. Now, as the first part within this sermon today, I'm going to review some highlights about God's time, but I want to have a second part too, and I'll identify that. I think it will become obvious, and that's the tie-in to what we've already been hearing about how events are escalating, if we can use that word, but they are finding their way into fulfillment. A second part will address some very crucial events that have been developing in Europe and the rest of the world that Americans in particular are just totally unaware of. But they're changing things the way we understand them, and I think we'll be shocked. In fact, we've written about that in some of our booklets, but if you're not really tuned in, you might be missing the details on that. One of the booklets that this is mentioned in is that in the Bible, the mysteries of the book of Revelation. But I'll save that for the second part. All right, by way of review, as I indicated, look at some highlights about God's use of time. You know, we look at time from the perspective of past, present, and future, in which events occur in apparently irreversible succession. So, yesterday, today, tomorrow. We think of time in terms of seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, seasons, and years. I mean, you know these time frames. And with the exception of seconds, these time markers are also found in the Bible. Genesis 1, let's go there to begin with, and looking at what God says about time. From the very outset, He is revealing Himself as the author of time. Genesis 1, and let's read verses 1 through 3. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And those are the very celestial bodies that we, the human beings, these scientists that Mr. Bannon was talking about, look at and make their computations from. Verse 2, the earth was without form and void, and other translations actually render this, the earth became without form and void, tohu and bohu, I believe is the Hebrew of that. And darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Let's consider something that there, what we're viewing here is a existing universe with a moon, sun, planets, where people who do not really closely look at the Word of God get confused as they think that all was created right here. Well, it does say in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Then we jump to verse 2, and they call that the gap theory, but nonetheless, we come upon the scene about 6,000 years ago when God again created something on this earth, an earth that he had formed according to what science reveals that's, you know, in the billions of years in age. So a lot went before this in time. But then, verse 3, then God said, let there be light, and there was light, and God saw the light. Continuing in verse 5, God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, so the evening and the morning were the first day. We see a demarcation here now of how God is beginning to number days. You can go through and highlight, as most of us probably have done over at different times, the first day, the second day, and on and on it goes, as God does these different creative actions on these various days. But then we come to a pivotal time in the scheme of things here. But let me just make sure I've not left out anything I want to... Okay, verse 14 before we continue, because it shows again that God is delineating time frames here. Verse 14, then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day and the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and for years. He's the one that spun all of these orbs into their locations and then into their rotation and set them up the way they are. Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3. We come to the day that follows the sixth day. In Genesis 2 and verse 2, and on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all of the work which he had done. Notice verse 3, then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all of his work which God had created and made. What is recorded here and what God did was and remains absolutely important, not only to us, but to God himself. He's the one that rested, that blessed this day and set it apart. Now, throughout the Bible, the Sabbath is mentioned, but let's go over now to Exodus 20, find another place where the seventh day is, receive some instruction, not just a memorial of its creation and the fact that God did something, but now he points to his people, and gives him a set of commandments, including the commandment about the Sabbath. Exodus 20 and verse 1, notice who's doing the speaking here in this rendition of the Ten Commandments. And God spoke all these words, saying, and we continue now and drop down to verse 8, and we'll read through verse 11, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. It was made holy, set apart, made special, not mundane or ordinary, but holy for a purpose of God's. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. This would obviously need to be a countrywide, a nationwide, not just one family. I mean, they may be all the few that observe it in these days, but it was intended for a way of administering a society, that this Sabbath would be observed in these terms. When Ezra and Nehemiah came back in from Babylonian captivity, they had to fight to establish a society that actually kept the Sabbath and the rest of God's holy days and other commandments. But continuing in verse 11, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. It was made, the seventh day was made to have a different meaning from the rest of those days that preceded it. But we see that there's a sequence of day one, we come up to day seven, and then what happens? It repeats again. Now, some might argue that, well, time has been lost, right? There's no possible way that the sequence of the days of the week have remained. We'll look at a little bit of evidence that can kind of ratchet down the argument in our favor regarding this. Let's go to Exodus 31 and see again something that puts just a little different connotation, I think a fuller meaning. Exodus 31 verses 12 through 17. It's again God talking about His holy Sabbath. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbaths you shall keep. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you, who sets you apart." Not just this day, but a sign. The Sabbath has tremendous importance for those people who are obedient to God and with whom God is working. "You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you," not just to God. It is set apart for you, the people. It's a little nuanced tuning of the understanding that God is giving His people here. "But it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work in it, that person shall be cut off from among the people." So did God consider this an important observance for His people? Well, look at the consequences if they did not. "Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord," not just to us, but to the Lord. "Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. Get my voice to work here. "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day He rested and was refreshed." Now, we could go do a sidebar and talk about this. In 6 days, this and this was made. There is an explanation. I think we've actually written a Q&A on a little fuller understanding of that. But that's not my direction here, so let me keep going. Ezekiel 20, verse 12, God is contending with, and He addresses, although it's Ezekiel in Babylon, and it's mainly Judah that has gone into this captivity, He nonetheless addresses it much more broadly. In Ezekiel 20 and verse 12, He's contending with the nation of Israel. This has both its historical application as well as a more futuristic meaning. He says, "Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them." Now, who has maintained this sign throughout national histories? In fact, what is the seventh day actually called? It's called that Jewish Sabbath. That's the way, and it's not done usually pleasantly, and it's referred to, you keep the Jewish Sabbath. Well, it's not just a Jewish Sabbath, it is the Sabbath made holy by God. It's the Sabbath that all of the world will eventually keep. But it's important. God set this apart, and only one tribe has maintained a knowledge and a practice of the Sabbath, again, bringing in their own traditions and polluting their understanding to some degree, but they still observe it when the time comes to them. They still keep the sequence of it being the seventh day, the day following the sixth day. It's important. Now, God adds this dimension to the seventh day. I'm going to get a little, again, some we all know about the Sabbath. That's why we're here. But I think it's good at times to review and you know, kind of enhance our own understanding and commitment. We're going to need that enhancement, I promise you. Leviticus 23 and verse 3. 6 days, and he lists this holy day right alongside all of the rest of the holy days, special times that he has set aside during each year. And each year, all of these are to be observed. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. We're here. We've convened. We are convoking together, if you want to say it that way. In other words, God intended for there to be worship services. That's why we meet on the strength of this and other examples, but it is a holy convocation, a holy gathering of the people of God. You shall do no work in it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all of your dwellings. So we see, you know, the development of the Sabbath in from God's perspective. The Ten Commandments are also reviewed in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 12 through 15, in that whole area there. But I would like to look at Deuteronomy 5 and verse 15, because we see an added meaning on the Sabbath, and this has great importance to us, brethren, as we apply the lesson spiritually, as we do in some of the holy days, especially the Passover, and as well, actually, all of the holy days. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 15. Again, these are the words that Moses spoke about as a witness of the Ten Commandments. These are not the same words that, in the same way that, you know, God is specifically quoted in Exodus 20, but here Moses is reviewing these things, recounting all of these things, pleading with, reminding Israel. And Mr. Bannon already spoke about how Moses was even admitting to his downfall when he was not allowed to go into the promised land because of his sin. Deuteronomy 5, verse 15, and remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Now, what does that have to do with the Sabbath? Keep reading. And the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. A day of rest. A rest from what? From slavery. How would that apply to us? Well, we've been called out of the spiritual Egypt. And we are commanded to keep the Sabbath day with this same thing in mind, that we were bound by Satan in rebellion, and God called us out of that. Keep the Sabbath day. Rejoice, you have the rest to look forward to that is even typified in the book of Hebrews. There remains a keeping of the Sabbath to the people of God, as it states there. Well, we see that God gave Israel rest. He is revealing that He's not only the God of creation, which that commemorated, as we read in Genesis, but He is also the God of redemption, of the ultimate rest that He will give all people who turn to Him. So there are points. We have to be mindful of God. We can't drift away from Him. And as I don't know about you, but I experienced this. I come back to the Sabbath, the whole mood of the week changes. You know, we've got this one day we cannot do things, but what we can do so far outweighs what we can't do. You have to rest. What a deal. If your boss is, take the rest of the afternoon off. Think about what a good boss I am. But again, I think you see what I'm saying. We have this priceless opportunity. Now, over time, Israel, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, lost their knowledge of God's time. That did happen. In Nehemiah 9, verse 14, we'll go there for just a minute, because this recaps what God did to the people, and then we'll read where he actually did that. Nehemiah 9 and verse 14, in this long prayer here, he says, "You made known to them your holy Sabbath, and commanded them precepts, statutes, and laws by the hand of Moses, your servant." He makes this statement that God made known to them the Sabbath, because they had lost that knowledge. Now, this is important because from this time forward, once Israel was given the knowledge of the Sabbath, the seventh day has never been lost in time up to our time. God revealed his calendar to Israel to start with before he revealed the Sabbath. Exodus 12, verses 1 through 2. Exodus 12, verses 1 through 2. "Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, 'This month shall be the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you.'" And then we know that upon this structure, God built all of the holy days. He numbered the months. Leviticus 23, of course, is an example of that in a broad format. But God also revealed the seventh day to Israel. He had to. They didn't know. Exodus 16, verse 23. I'm going to read this from the King James. I think it's just a small bit clearer in the way it states some things. But this whole chapter, Exodus 16, is a lesson in how to keep the Sabbath. God revealed it by giving them manna. You know, day by day he gave them manna, but on Friday, the preparation day as it is called, the sixth day, he gave a double portion, and it actually kept so that they could use it the next day, but if they kept any other day, it spoiled. So again, why? Because God wanted his people to observe the Sabbath. You think about that. They're fleeing slavery. They don't have all the conveniences of anything. And yet God says, "You're going to keep my Sabbath." And there are consequences if you don't. But in Exodus 16, verse 23, "And he said unto them, 'This is what the Lord hath said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye shall bake today, and seethe that which ye shall seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning.'" But the point is, it is the rest of the holy Sabbath, is the wording I wanted to take from the King James Version here in this 23rd verse. The New King James is a little redundant there. Well, this whole chapter recounts how the children of Israel were taught about the Sabbath, and consequently, they were taught how to measure a week, how many days, and when it would begin, and when it would end, and then how it would be repeated. So, once again, we see that God is revealing time. Were there other calendars extant at that time? Well, certainly. But not ones as there are today and as there has been throughout history. But God has a specific calendar with days demarked throughout that calendar year. It is incontrovertibly evident from the New Testament that Jesus Christ knew about God's time. He kept what his fellow Jews kept in terms of the Sabbath observance. So starting, going all the way back to Exodus, coming all the way forward to Jesus Christ, the Sabbath has been understood and known, even in captivity, and coming out of captivity. They were in captivity roughly 70 years. But during that time, they did keep the knowledge of the Sabbath. And when they came back, Ezra and Nehemiah went very strongly back to obedience to keeping these things, and the Jews were so concerned, I think it did give rise to their picayune little points and all the burdens that they added to the Sabbath to make sure that for that reason they weren't driven into captivity, except they missed the big picture and they didn't really keep the Sabbath the way God wanted it kept, as Jesus Christ had to reveal. Now consider that Jesus Christ closely identified himself with the Sabbath. That's the message throughout the gospel. Do a word search and find out where Sabbath appears so frequently. Guess, the gospels. Time and time again, the Sabbath. And it was always an issue. And on, Jews were saying, you don't keep it correctly, kill him. They were ready to do that because they thought that his healing of someone on the Sabbath day profaned it. Luke 4, verse 16. Jesus goes into his hometown and doesn't receive a very favorable welcome, but just notice what it says about him. And the fact that he is, the point I want to take from this is he is verifying that the Jews, his fellow Jews, have it right. They're keeping the right day, the seventh day, as God from the beginning has established. Luke 4 and verse 16, and he came to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up to read, for to read. One other just brief citation here I'd like to pick up about Jesus Christ in Mark 2, verses 27 through 28. Mark 2, verse 27 through 28. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. There's an enrichment of why the Sabbath even exists. It shouldn't be a burden, but a joy. It was made for man. You know, God rested, but he created by resting. By virtue of that, he rested. Think of the world if, you know, it's just flat out work, work, work all the time. And you see people in society who do that and what the consequences are to their lives. And then he goes on to say, therefore the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. Well, of course he is. He is the one recorded in Genesis who actually rested because all things were created through him. He was the one. Now, we know, and history will attest to it, many, many authors will say this, that the practice regarding keeping the Sabbath at this point in time, the time of Jesus Christ, has come to down to us in an unbroken pattern, or sequence, I should say, to this day. Now, calendars have changed. Days have been added or taken away. The week, the sequence of the weekdays have not been altered. Now, much research, obviously, has been done on this, but people get confused when they try to coordinate the solar year, which depends on the sun, with lunar months. How many months in a year? 12. Well, that's not quite right, because then you have leap years and so forth. So adjustments have to be made. But they don't change the days of the week, nor did they change the days of the week. In respect to the necessity of keeping a unified calendar, that has fallen to the tribe of Judah. Now we know that the Levites continued, and you know they were the priests of God, the tribe that was set apart for that, but they have also continued with Judah to some extent, dating all the way back to the time of when Rehoboam rejected God and his, along with God's priest and God's holy days. We actually mentioned something about that in the current member letter that's going out. But let's look at Romans 3, verses 1 through 3, and see something that is stated about the tribe of Judah, because they do have a responsibility, because they have kept the Sabbath as a sign. Certain things have evidently fallen to them and will again in the future. What advantage then has the Jew? I'm reading from Romans 3, verse 1 now. Or what is the profit of circumcision? Much in every way, chiefly because to them were committed the oracles, the sayings, the scriptures, the writings of God. I think I'll just stop with that. But let's go back to Matthew 23 and read verses 1 through 3. Because Jesus Christ makes a statement that very much verifies what Paul was saying in Romans. In Matthew 23, verses 1 through 3, then Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do, but do not do according to their works, for they say and do not do. Jesus observed the Sabbath and holy days, and also, that was also kept by the Jews. But he didn't keep the Sabbath in the same manner as did the Jews, because they were incorrect in that. And likewise, the disciples observed the Sabbath and the holy days and went to Jewish synagogues. But what did they do when they did that? They practiced Christianity. They were meeting on the right day. The holy convocation was occurring there. Now, think about this on the authority of sitting in Moses' seat. The Church of God, and I maybe Church of the Eternal God can be the ones. Are we the ones commissioned to go and build the temple just before Christ returns? Who will that fall to? Who has that authority? And a temple that we know from Ezekiel 40 on that Christ will return to and enter, and it will be sanctified because it's going to be polluted by some of these characters we're hearing about in Mr. Zerung's announcements, what he's referring to. And they, by doing this, they are, again, fulfilling the office of Moses very early on. Well, think about this. 100 years ago, would you have thought that some of these things could have been possible, that the Jews would be back in the homeland, that there could even be the possibility? And again, we think, we believe that every indication is that there will be a temple built. But again, as Mr. Zerung was talking about different personalities, from Franz Joseph Strauss to the current ones, we've been watching to see who will arrive on the scene to fulfill certain things. So that's the same position we take on the temple, that we're watching what God will reveal. Well, the ongoing message from God includes the true knowledge of His Sabbath. And for those who don't keep His holy Sabbath, the need to do so absolutely remains. Let's go to Isaiah 58 and read verses 13 through 14. Let's understand, you need the strength of conviction and commitment that the Sabbath must be kept for what many will face. And may God give us in His mercy the opportunity to escape some of the things that are going to happen. Isaiah 58, verses 13 through 14. If, and this is the appeal that God puts out, this is part of the gospel that we preach. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasures, nor spending your own words. Speaking your own words. I was thinking about spending, because what day is the most commercial day of the week? Absolutely Saturday. It's when everybody goes shopping. You know, it's just if it's a tradition. Then you shall, verse 14, delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. Brethren, the Sabbath will be observed in the future, and I just take a couple of minutes to touch on some scriptures that refer to that. Understanding that we're preaching the gospel, say, look, you have to keep the Sabbath if you're going to be obedient to God. That the Christianity most you're practicing, reject that. And consequently, God rejects them. He even says, in through the words of Christ, I never knew you. Let's go to Isaiah 66, verse 23. A couple of scriptures to look at. Isaiah 66, verse 23. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, one month to another, and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh shall come to worship before me, says the Lord. Ezekiel 46, verse 1. Then I'm going back to that set of scriptures that puts us right into that immediate period going into the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. And so much having to do with the temple and things that will be occurring at that time. Ezekiel 46, verse 1, thus says the Lord God, the gateway of the inner court that faces toward the east, this is talking about a structure that does exist, shall be shut for 6 working days, but on the Sabbath it shall be opened, and on the day of the new moon it shall be open. It kind of buttresses and supports what I just read in Isaiah 66, verse 23. Okay, now part 2. It's shorter. So there is hope for you. Our knowledge of the Sabbath, of God's time, and how He established the week and its sequence in particular is now under very powerful attack. There is a whole different world out there from what we operate in. And I was struck in doing some reading in preparation for this sermon, but something came up about the European Convention. And here is what it is, and I'm going to give you the strength of where this comes from. It's powerful, it's pervasive, and it will have staggering impact as time goes on. The European Convention is that the week starts on Monday and runs through Sunday, and they call the calendars that come out of those Monday calendars. Now, I talk about the European Convention here, but let me also bring something else to light here. There's an organization called the International Organization for Standardization. It's it's got another name. It's called ISO. And what they do, this word ISO is not an acronym for what I just read. In fact, it just means equal. There's a headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland, and it's been in existence since 1947. What they do is try to standardize all things. And on the face of it, that's all good, as long as they're standardizing right things. I mean, in the electronics industry and all kinds of industries, this organization has sway. But they have a ruling, I guess I could call it. It's called ISO 8601. It includes the ISO week date system, a numbering system for weeks. Each week begins on a Monday. Now, most nations belong to this ISO, and they derive their rules from that. And there's a lot more you could read and go into, which I certainly won't be doing today. This arrangement is more tied to the work school week. Now, I was reading a bunch of bloggers talking about the difficulty they have with their iPads and their different PDAs and all these things. that their weeks are set up like the Americans do, because we originate a lot of the software and things. But they said the ISO 8601 convention is, quoting here, a much more practical, logical, and functional arrangement, sort of like the metric system, which is obviously better than the inch-foot system of America. You know, iPhone apps cater to this now. So you're seeing, if you look at the calendars, on the those who use calendars whose weeks actually begin with Sunday as the first day on that lineup up there, guess where? North America, Canada, United States, and the rest of the world predominantly now have these Monday calendars, as they call it. Now, that was written about, Mr. Link brought that out in, is that in the Bible, the mysteries of the book of Revelation, and he just highlights that. And of course, it's on chapter 15, the Mark of the Beast, has, you might turn to that and read a little more details of what he had to say. People look to Sunday as the day of rest because they, what? They believe what the papal authority has established, that Christ was resurrected on Sunday. And as I mentioned before, most people kind of look at the Sabbath as merely a Jewish practice. There was a council by the Catholic Church. It's called the Council in Laodicea. I don't know if it's exact. It's the same Laodicea mentioned in the Bible, because there are duplicate names back there. It's roughly 364 AD. It's Canon 29 out of this council. And we go back to here, and I just want to make a few brief comments, and I'm pretty much winding down here in the next very few minutes. I'd like to read Canon 29. Christians should not Judaize and be idle on Saturday, but shall work on that day. But the Lord's day they shall especially honor, and as being Christians shall, if possible, do no work on that day. I like the conditionality here. If possible, do no work on that day. If, however, they are found Judaizing, they shall be shut out from Christ, anathema. It goes a lot further than that, brethren. The record of history is very plain that when Catholicism gained such preeminence all over the European world, people were burned in cages because they kept the Sabbath. That happened. They were martyred. And generally, there's such a vicious aspect to all of this stuff that it's hard to even mention, but you can read about this. And a lot of it centered around just keeping the Sabbath. When I was a young man, keeping the Sabbath stood out like a sore thumb in the community that I was a part of. We're lost now. We don't know who our neighbors are, so it's not a big deal. But times have been different, and times are going to be different again. I'd like to go for at least one more scripture in Daniel. Let's go to Daniel 7, verse 25. It is a prophecy, brethren, that is going to take place. Some of the things that Mr. Link was mentioning in the most recent Standing Watch program about war between Europe and the United States, with the United States losing, and a war, a European army headed up by Germany and other powers, is on the horizon. But look, I've been giving you this ISO background. We are well into the deep end of the pool on prophecy. These things are already happening at a way and at a level that we need to understand. Daniel 7 and verse 25, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High, speaking about this false individual, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law, and then the saints shall be given into his hands for a time and times and half a time, 3.5 years. This is an end time prophecy. This is something that is out in front of us, brethren, and it will come about. You can, on your own, I would refer to Revelation 13. I won't take the time to go into that now. But we are living in a world that is spiritually asleep, especially when it comes to the Sabbath. And we're not only going to be lights, the more and more our observance of the Sabbath is practiced will not necessarily make people happy with us. We will be detested and then persecuted. And for some who don't wake up in time, because God has held out great promises of deliverance for those who continue to ask about it, to stay awake, to participate in the work, and be really involved. That's how you stay awake. If you're doing the work of God, you are awake. If you're not, you are asleep. At any rate, let's keep it in mind. It is very sobering. Some will finally stand for God's ways under threat of certain death, and some will be martyred. That's just what we could read about in Revelation 13, indicated that war is going to be made against the saints of the Most High for 3.5 years. There's also a promise of protection for 3.5 years. I'm going to keep you anchored to that as well. But brethren, here's the final appeal, is that some will stand up for and continue to stand in the truth right now when it can really count. This is what God has called us to do, and don't ever underestimate your role. We look back at Scripture and maybe ahead at prophecy and everything looks bigger than life, but we are who God has called. We and anyone else, not only our organization, but people who have God's Holy Spirit. But there is a degree of zeal and a degree of lack of zeal that God takes great exception to, and there are consequences for that. So, brethren, how about us? You and me. It's about time.